Hello, and welcome back to the Legends of Tomorrow Flashcast. I am coming to you live from the middle of a jacked up time stream. This is Lisa Schmeiser. With me are Tony Sindelar.
Hello, nerds.
Yay. And Dan Morin.
I must ask you to introduce me by my full name.
Yes. Oh, that's delightful. I was going to say, I have but one word for this podcast, and that is beer. Anyway, I apologize on behalf of everybody for the absence. We have been stricken by viruses cross country. Both Tony and I went down with terrible viruses. Dan, fortunately, did not catch the plague. He just went on a great vacation.
I fled the country. Exactly. I was feared.
Yes.
Dan Morin, noted author and one step ahead of the law. That's how he lives his life.
Yes, I was going to say one step ahead of the future. That's what Dan is. He's like,
yeah, that's right.
I see the plague coming. I'm fleeing the warmer climes. So that happened. And you know what? Of all the flashcasts for that to happen, why not on the one that takes a really casual approach to linear time? So we are going to take a cue from our subject material. And here's the deal. Today, we're going to talk about Hell No Dolly, which is the episode that aired on Monday, December 3rd. Next week, we'll flashcast on the finale, Legends of Two Meow Meow. And then when the show itself goes on hiatus after its mid-season finale, we will go back and flesh out the episodes we miss, including Tender is the Nate, Kajuro Attacks, and I'm sure there's one or two others I am missing. So that is where we are. We have just finished out an episode which was magnificently lunatic, and we will move on to the opening proceedings for our podcast, which are to give you a flash cap. That is a flash like recap of the episode. Do I have any volunteers for our flash cap?
make Dan do
oh,
it.
Oh man, make Dan make do me it. Do it. That sounds terrible. Yeah.
Tony,
I just took a large step behind Dan.
why am I in front of this line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could take a shot at it.
All right.
Dan, we're going to be mean to you either way.
It's fine. I'm sure I'm going to leave many things out because I'm doing this entirely from memory right now.
Yeah, we literally did not let you prepare. So, welcome to the Legends of Tomorrow, Legends of Mustaches podcast. Mustaches of Tomorrow. Mustaches
again, in the spirit of the show, we've all put on our finest period costumes to listen to. Dan, if you'd like, I can step in. And do
I don't
it.
Dress right. up.
Okay.
I'm the John Constantine character who's just wearing the stupid trench coat every time.
All right. So let me see what we cover. So. We got A, B, and C plots this week. A plot is the A team, which is Ava and Ava and Ray and Sarah and Mick going to New Orleans in the late 1800s to find a serial killer, which has been, like, a bunch of murders have been pinned on this noted African-American psychic or clairvoyant. So they go and track down that, which involves a possessed doll by a Dybbuk. They manage to make short work of it, bring it back to the ship. And of course, it's not entirely dead. And so it possesses the therapy doll of Martin Stein that we saw Citizen Cold used to such effect last year. The B plot is Constantine going back to try and undo his relationship with a New Orleans bartender named Desmond, who ended up getting dragged to hell on his account because of this demon that he is fighting with. He enlists Zari to help, but things go really bad when he actually undoes a big knot, because he's trying to also help out Charlie to regain her shape-shifting powers by essentially removing himself from the legends by screwing up the timeline, which is a really bad idea because it causes a lot of other problems.
You would think that a wizard who's really big into causality would understand what this would do.
Yeah, it was not a good call.
Real bad choice, Johnny.
Yeah, we'll get to the discussion. We got a C plot.
Not your best choice, Johnny. You can do better.
C plot at the Time Bureau. Nate is trying to help Gary win the affections of Mona. Mona, meanwhile, is much more into the copay, which has also been stabbed by mysterious people who also show up to abduct it later on. She tries to stop them. The copay in its bloodlust rakes her across the stomach and then flees, looking very ashamed of what it done. However, everything freezes when Constantine screws up his timeline, and our last shot, I believe, is Charlie looking down in the jump ship where the shockwave has gone through the time continuum to find that Zari is now a cat for reasons I don't understand.
So,
my question was I supposed to understand why she's a cat?
No,
was she secretly
so.
A cat all along?
So a note to listeners on this podcast and a note to those of us who are discussing it, because we are effectively leaping ahead a bunch of episodes, I'm going off the assumption we've all seen the episodes. There are no spoilers for anything that happened after the second episode in this season. So when we talk about the stuff that's happened, if we have to refer back to prior episodes, we're going to assume that you guys already know about this, okay?
I'm
so,
good with
in
that.
Other words, no spoilers. If, no spoilers. There are no spoilers happening because no spoilers exist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, more or less, like timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. It's
yes, exactly. Because what I was getting the impression is with this. So when I finished watching this episode, I was actually sorry it was done, because just when I thought things couldn't get more ridiculous, they get more ridiculous with every scene. Because this is, again, this is an episode that starts off with the revelation that Mick has been keeping this artifact from a few episodes back, an artifact in which he wrote a Japanese cinema horror style story about a triple-breasted warrior goddess named Garima, who conquered the monster in a previous episode and has fallen for Mick, whose narrative alter ego in his romance novels is Buck. So, like, this is how it starts off, as we find out that Garima has been running around the ship. Mick has only taught her one word. That word is beer. Everybody, like, is not batting an eye over the fact that a triple-breasted blue and pink faced warrior princess is running around the ship going, beer, beer.
Which tells you everything you need to know about this show.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is, yeah. Yeah. And this is the starting point. It only gets weirder from here.
Well, I had that moment so of funny. I had the moment of thinking, like, you know, maybe three the quarters of the way through it, like, man, this is a weirdly structured episode. It does not seem like they are, how are they going to wrap everything up? And I realize, oh, it's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have that. And then, you know, again, things just get weird. But it's also, they've begun pulling together some of the threads that they've been laying down all season. And the more I thought about this episode, the more I was like, oh my gosh, they've really done some impressive groundwork here. Because one of the ongoing things to the episode, Ava takes away the magic diary because she tells Mick it's an artifact. You can't have it. You shouldn't be using it. It's wrong. Garima belongs in your imagination. Mick does not respond well to this at all. There is some name calling. He threatens to stab her at one point. Mm-hmm. You know, it finally kind of resolves itself in crisis when she gets stabbed by the possessed puppet of Martin Stein.
And I had forgotten about Martin Stein's puppet. Oh, like, I was like, I've seen this before, but I have no memory of it because so many wild out there things happen. Yeah.
The Easter egg I loved on that is that when the Dybbuk possesses it, it's in a box labeled 309, which is, of course, the episode that the puppet was in was season 3, episode 9.
Oh, God. I just saw the miscellaneous.
And I was like, wait, 309. I'm pretty sure that's when the puppet last appeared. So kudos to you, Legends production staff.
Oh my gosh, it was so great. But yeah, so Mick kind of resolves it. But the thing that I actually found kind of poignant is in the episode where we meet Garima a couple episodes back, like, that episode closes with Mick typing on his typewriter and finishing his romance novel. And his last passage is, Garima had helped him conquer the monster, but she also helped him conquer the real monster, his own fear. And like, when they take away his access to the diary and ergo his access to Garima, it's a lot more emotional than the show plays it. They only kind of allude to it. And so when Mick gets mad and he asks Sarah, why can you have your pretend girlfriend and I can't have mine? Like, I was like, oh, this is Mick kind of trying to get around to saying that you know, his feelings for Garima are as legitimate as your feelings for Ava. But he doesn't have the vocabulary and he wouldn't say it like that anyway. So I was very moved. Weirdly,
I guess I was a little impressed that he was finally kind of woven into a plot. He is a very one note character. And there's a lot of episodes that he's kind of barely in, or he's just into, you know, to do one Mick thing and that's it, right? So I thought the episode where he got to be the resolution was very entertaining, and I like that came back.
I was thinking as I was watching this that, like, we've now had a lot more, I think even in total, a lot more Mick without Captain Cold than with Captain Cold, which is interesting because, you know, he definitely started out as a character that was, you know, a sideshow, I think, to Wentworth Miller's Captain Cold, like a partner, but like, he was the charming one, the one who did all the talking, etc. And we have now seen a lot more of Mick.
Dan, you've also, by seeing those episodes, you basically have seen all of Prison Break too, so you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
It's yeah, like that.
It's the same dynamic. Far fewer puppets, I think.
It's interesting, as you said, like, to have him a little more intertwined with things. And I like the moment I really love in here is there's a moment where they're back in New Orleans and they're, you know, investigating this mysterious killer, and Mick is still bent out of shape, and Sarah basically says like, oh well, you know, give her a chance, do it for me. And like, for me, it was the relationship, like, you know, of Sarah has a bond with Mick, like, and I loved that she could appeal to that and that he actually was responsive to it, if not verbally, but like his actions indicate that he respects her and treats her as a friend, which is a lot more depth from this character, I think, than anybody would have expected in season one.
We do get the line later that apparently he robbed the party blind, which I'm totally willing to accept is basically his coping mechanism.
Well, and everybody was like, yeah, that's fine. Nobody really cares about that.
Petty theft does not disrupt a time stream, you know? Right.
Yeah. So I really enjoy
how they've rolled that into so many episodes too, because it was the beginning of season three where, you know, you see that he's been robbing this French castle blind, and it comes up repeatedly where even if the legends are focused on changing a timeline, Mick is looking around for things to steal, and everyone's like, yeah, that's totally
leopard can't change its spots.
Yeah. Look, he's useful. Let him steal things. None of them blown up yet.
I guess he's got a gun that shoots fire, so, like, you know, pretty much let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's it. And I do find it interesting. So there were a lot of things in this episode that I the more I thought about them, the more I was like, okay, on the surface, again, it's an episode that features a triple-breasted warrior princess with a one-word vocabulary, a killer puppet, a really bad and hilarious mustache joke, and then someone turning into a cat. But it's got like all of these weird layers. Like, the more you think about it, the more you're like, wow, we're going to start forcing the issue with Nate and his dad. Because you know that the Time Bureau plot and the fact that the Kopeck is getting kidnapped by like bad dudes, I'm willing to bet that points to the Project
Project Hades
that Hayward Sr. is involved in. What I also liked is that they made Gary hella creepy this week, because for a while they were kind of leaning hard into, oh, he's adorable and inept and he's Nate's new Time Bureau bestie. And then we find out he's also the kind of idiot who takes advice about picking up women from Reddit and tries nagging them. And you're like, oh, that's why you're a creep who everybody goes, Gary!
but at the same time, Nate is trying to rehabilitate him a little bit, which I liked in that point. Like, Nate kind of shoots him down like, no, don't do that. That is terrible. And, you know, it's nice to have him there as like a Gary Handler, as it were.
Yeah.
It's the
healthy friendship model thing. And right. I think this is actually what I was thinking about. This is like one of the things I really liked about Legends in general. And one of the things, I don't know if they're doing this on purpose or if I'm overreading into it because it's 2018 and things are bananas. But, you know, Ray. Nate and Ray have like one of the purest TV friendships ever. Like, they're just happy to see each other. They hug. They're super supportive. And they have feelings. They handle their feelings. And they're very honest about it. And Mick has found a healthy-ish outlet for his feelings through his fiction. And has actually made Mick like efforts to work on his relationships with other people, because you see here, like, he listens to Zari when she's like, you're a writer, this is what you do, and he does, he follows along with it. And by contrast, you have John Constantine, who pulls out all of these old masculinity tropes, like, I walk alone, and I don't need help, and I don't need a team, and my actions don't affect others. And the whole episode is basically like disproving that thesis repeatedly. John, no, toxic masculinity, even when it's wizardy, doesn't work.
Well, and more than that, John, I mean, like, we get the idea that Constantine's stuff comes from it's all coming from a place of pain too, right? Because we have his whole, like, his backstory with Desmond indicates, like, he really loved this guy, right? And, he he hates that he had to essentially like put him in harm's way and then send him to hell eventually.
Yeah, he literally condemned
right.
him
and
to
he's
hell.
Like, yeah. But there, right. like, that was what he had to do. And, you know, so he's trying to save him in the only way yeah. that he feels like he has the means at his disposal. And that mm-hmm. is a, you know, there is a certain degree of selflessness to that. However, it is yeah. coupled with a very high selfishness since the effects on the rest of the timeline are clearly yeah. cataclysmic.
Clear it. Yeah, well, it reminds me a bit of Rip Hunter that way too.
Sure.
Because yeah. you know, I like to pretend that season one largely doesn't exist. season one largely doesn't exist. Let's just go there. But at the same way, he was doing that whole lone wolf, I have no teams, I'm honest, I have great intentions, and paying mm-hmm. the consequences.
They basically wear the same jacket too.
Yeah, so, right. you know. Yeah, exactly. They wear the same jacket, they have the same accent. It's you know, yeah. just the hair dye is different. And yeah. and I enjoy it, but I enjoy that Legends is kind of quietly putting it out there that no, things work out when you handle your feelings like an adult and you handle other people's feelings like an adult. And when you can't do that, that is when things go pear-shaped. And I find it to be a really interesting thesis, especially across like superhero shows.
Yeah.
Where like most of the time, the plot in a superhero show is, I must walk alone. And five people in the background are like, no, you don't. And then the superhero flies off. So this is completely different. I love
or goes off on an arrow-based zip line, one of those.
Exactly, one of those. But yeah, no, so no, I thought it was super funny. And I do think, though, I want to ask you guys, what do you think about Mona so far?
I think she's a really fun addition. You know, I mean, she's clearly cut from a lot of the same cloth as Gary in terms of the awkward weirdo. But I don't know. So far, she's fun. I mean, I like that she basically worked her way up from food delivery girl to like magic mythical creature upkeep. Like that's a good promotion. Like,
so, also the werewolf romance subplot is a fascinating choice. And you know what? Fine. Yes. That's cool. Whatever.
You know what? Like, there's a lot in this episode. There will be a lot for future scholars to unpack about what few things went right in 2018, and this episode is I would like to submit to the Ivory Tower as like, you know, a lot of bad happened.
There was some good. There were some glimmers.
We have this, you know, this episode that has, you know, multiple queer romance stories and also a girl who's in love with a Polynesian werewolf thing.
Yeah.
So
she's learning Hawaiian phrases for him. I love that.
Yeah,
part.
I love that. Yeah, but I also we get a great idea of her personality right from the get-go in this episode when the dude like doors her with his car and is then like, oh, like you got to pay for this. Like the who later turns out, of course, to be one of the secret operatives who is trying to kidnap the copay. And
my question is, what is that guy's job? Just jerk?
Yeah, apparently.
Because he's doing it off the clock and on the clock.
Right. Yeah. You know? But she goes along with it, right?
Between like, work and not work for him.
She goes along with it. And she's just like, oh, she tries to fight back for a second. And then she's like, oh, I guess so. Sure. And it's like, it's the, you know who it is? It's Marty's dad at the beginning of Back to the Future.
Yeah,
it was just like, whatever, it's fine, I'll totally pay for this. And I think that gives me hope because I feel like this is her starting point, and what we're going to hopefully see through the rest of the season is her becoming more confident and more assertive now that she has this role.
Also, it's a CW show. She might get
superpowers.
She might become a mutant human or be given an amulet or at least like a sword that lights itself on fire and tells jokes or something, right? Like, not only will she discover who she is, she will get something with which to wreak vengeance, I feel like, at some point.
Yeah. Well,
that also,
she'll wreak vengeance with like a bottle of hot sauce. I feel like that's also a possibility for her.
That also raises an interesting question about.
She did get scratched by a werewolf, right?
I was thinking about that. Maybe that is a. Yeah. She will be a magical creature herself. But I was also thinking about since we haven't done the show in a couple weeks, we haven't had a chance to talk about Charlie at all. That's been she's been an interesting addition to the cast. I have to say full, like, huge kudos to Maisie Richardson Sellers for playing an entirely different character. And then at a couple incidences playing her previous character as her new character pretending to be her previous character.
Little bit of like Shades of Orphan Black in there.
But I enjoyed how she put on a bad American accent to talk to John that was definitely not Amaya and yet like was intended to convince him that she was Amaya.
Yeah. And the fact that she's so meta about it, she's like, yeah, all my great best friends and my boyfriend. And you're like, oh, wow, that is a commentary on the show. I love it. It's Charlie's been great. And I feel like when we do the flashcast for the episode where we introduce her, I feel like we need to talk about what Constantine did to her, because that's a whole big conversation, too. And I find the transactional nature of their relationship interesting, because it's not friendship. Like, the two of them have no illusions about each other and no real affection. It's just basically, I will help you because you can help me. And he's like, yes, yes, that's fine. You know, also,
yes,
you know what terrifying demon I'm up against. Mm-hmm. So.
They're kind of on the same page where it comes to that sort of stuff, which is interesting. Like, you know, and mix kind of like that too at times. And I think, you know, they're mm-hmm. bringing sort of the slightly less reputable, like they make that joke at the beginning is like, where they're like, I get it. I'm on the B team and there's no such thing as a B team, but there is such a thing as the A team.
On the other hand, I mean, Ray is on the A team, right? And he does nothing this episode. His role this episode is to own a mustache.
First of all, I will hear nothing bad said about Brandon Routh's mustache. It's incredible.
No.
I mean, Dan, is that actually Brandon Routh's mustache?
I don't know, but I want to believe that it is.
I don't think it is.
Dan. I want to believe.
It's amazing,
Tony.
Whatever it is. That is quite the lip carpet.
I'm sorry. The end of the episode where the ship gets hit when he shaves half of it off. And then it's frozen in time with half a mustache. Oh, so good.
Yes. I think what I like, I think we'll have to circle back to a conversation about like Ray and his arc this season too. But again, Legends of Tomorrow flashcasts were kind of going nonlinear the same way the Legends do as they ping pong through history. But I feel like you said, he didn't do a whole lot this episode. He just kind of freaked out over the sugar content of the cereal Zari was inhaling. And got hit by a homicidal puppet and then, you know, wandered in to get strangled by a homicidal puppet. So that was it. Zari, though, I thought had some nice character growth this episode, even if it was completely inadvertent and against her will, when she was like, you just don't mess with the timeline. I'm sorry. And if you do, for your own selfish reasons, I will make you pay for it. And I thought that is a huge change from the character who came on to Legends of Tomorrow with the, I'm going to mess with the timeline because if I can save my family and unravel this dystopian future, then that is what I'm going to do. Yeah. And I was like, sorry, you've become a legend, an actual responsible legend. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I like that she does try to find a loophole first, right? Like, she's like, if there is a way I can loophole you guys out of this, I will do that. But if there isn't, you got to let it lie.
Yeah,
they gotta lock down that jump ship because I feel like it only gets used for bad things.
Yeah,
right. They have a very trusting policy here on the open door policy on our wave rider jump ship for go off and do time travel that we don't want anyone else to know about.
Also, if you get
Sarah Lance is like the mom of the team, she's like the free range mom where she's like just be back in time for dinner. You know, don't break time.
Which thanks to time travel is real easy. So.
I also have to say, let's talk about like that last scene where they're frozen in time and you see everybody fighting the puppet or trying to, and just how beautiful that shot was and how nicely that was set up.
Yeah. It was a really impressive composited shot. And like, it's interesting what they've decided to spend their money on this year, because there's a lot of stuff where they don't really spend as much time on a lot of the powers or the like, you know, special effects related to the people. At the same time, they do spend a lot more on sort of like their bad guys and just sort of the environmental effects and stuff. And I think that's been an interesting change. And it's just sort of link in with that. It's been interesting how much in this sort of just speaking of a season trend so far, how much they've like moved away from a lot of the characters using their superpowers. Zari and Ray barely use theirs this season. Like, there's maybe been two scenes, I think, from each of them. And, you know, I think that's an interesting choice because it's so much more than about the team and not just being like, oh, we're each superheroes. This is what we bring to it. But it's like, no, it's about the relationships between them and them working together, using their brains, using like what other resources they have. Like, you know, I think that's been a nice shift in dynamic.
It's hard. A lot of superhero powers are not really well suited for teamwork, right? And this is becoming more and more of, this is just a show about wacky time travel hijinks with some people that have superhero-esque powers. Than it is about a super. I mean, it, perhaps some, to maybe its the real detriment, maybe it started the real as a superhero show. Teamwork.
But like that was
the
also
real superpower is the teamwork we made along the way. So
it also solved.
At least I think it's time travel.
It also solved the problem that they've had in the past of like people who have super like great powers that would just fix anything. Like when they started introducing the like Firestorm power, that they could transmute stuff, and it's like, oh, that just breaks everything. Like, why not just send Firestorm to do all your stuff for you?
Well, I also, Firestorm, and this is not to talk smack about any of the actors at any of the point, but it's just, it's weird. You have to admit, like, two men who are like, we get together, we begin flaming, and you're like, really? Really? That's where we're going with this? You set things on fire, and
I have to say,
there's two of you.
I like the version of Firestorm in... Justice League Go, which is basically just, it's a young guy with Firestorm powers, but he always has Professor Stein in his head talking to him. So, you know, and so, and people are like, who are you talking to? Kinds of moments a lot, right? So that's a little bit more fun. That doesn't work as well on a team show.
No, I think it's interesting. Like, you've only seen Nate go metal once or twice this year.
I was thinking about that like too.
And I think in a way, one of the genius things about shifting him to the Time Bureau is there's almost no cause for him to turn into like a big metal doll and run around. So that helps a lot. Like the only time he did that, I think, was like, yes, Dad, I'm a superhero. Clunk.
Well, he does it. He does it briefly when he fights the Minotaur, but like it doesn't it doesn't last long. So that's it is definitely a very different dynamic. And I really I really like it. I was going to say,
well, I think.
No, never mind. Go ahead. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Not you.
It's horrible.
Not you.
No, this is, I think if we're looking at a theme that's emerging this year, because like last year's theme was pretty much about having an identity as a team and learning how to balance that against your own means and goals. I mean, the whole Zari episode, Here I Go Again, was basically like the encapsulation of that theme. And then at the end, when they turn into the giant Bebo, you're like, yep, this is them. Because once, no, like once they accepted that this is where they were going, it worked, right? But I'm wondering if the theme that emerges this year is going to be about, I think, just relationships in general. And at what point you do, at what point you, like, what does love do to you? I think is the question that we're going to have answered. Because Nate and his dad are going to be headed for showdown at some point. Like, you wouldn't be investing this much time in that relationship and a working situation and all of that if that wasn't going to have a huge dramatic payoff in the back half of the season. And Sarah and Ava are going to go someplace because they're very happy, and that can't be allowed to last.
you need the conflict.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seems like probably there's a something bureaucratic will happen, right? Like maybe she has to side with Nate's dad until we find out that he's chaotic evil and not lawful evil.
Like that. Or Nate's dad like turns his back. Cause the question is it's not just how does Nate love his dad? It's like, how does his dad love his son? Cause one of the things that we've seen in a couple of these episodes too, is that his dad's been capable of changing his mind. So I guess the question is what does love do to you as a person? Mm-hmm. And this is where I actually have a lot of hope for what they're doing with Rory too, because again, he writes into existence the partner who helps him become a better version of himself. You know, and again, that's, and he's really upset when he doesn't have access to his partner anymore. And I'm waiting for someone else on that ship to realize that for him, who he loves and his creativity are kind of one and the same. And it's really cruel to cut him off. And go from there. So I wonder if this is the theme we're getting to, and if we're going to zoot back where Nate has this thing with his dad, and then Zari's going to, like, you don't show Zari's mom in the first episode of the season without making it relevant down the line, I don't think. And then we've got the Ray and Nora stuff going on in the background too. And at some point, again, you don't put a witch in the Time Bureau without expecting
Chekhov's her to witch.
Chekhov's witch. Yes, you don't put a witch on the table in the first act if you don't expect her to cast spells by the back half. So yeah, I'm wondering, I could be ever thinking, again, this is a show with a serial killer puppet, so I'm freely admitting I could be ever thinking this, but I have a lot of respect for how this writing team puts stuff together.
I will note, point of interesting fact was that I did not know until I read some review somewhere later that the Dybbuk was voiced by Paul Reubens.
Oh, that's great.
Who is no stranger, of course, to comic book fair, since he was on Gotham for a whole season as Penguin's dad,
reprising his role.
That's right.
The earlier Batman movies.
Thank you for reminding me.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, he's played the Penguin's father twice now, so in two different Batman continuities. what a world.
So what you're telling me is, if there's a multiverse with multiple Batmans, Paul Reubens is the father of the Penguin in all of them. Like, that's just one
well,
of the constants,
at least two.
Like,
at least
gravity
two.
And
yeah. There's a weak force, there's a strong force, and there's Paul Reubens. Yeah. So yeah.
And I think what
I like that we got to hear British people pronounce Minotaur. That was one of my highlights of the season.
Yes, yeah. So. Now, I think, and another thing, I've started to get Phil to watch the show, and it's basically been like, you don't have to have continuity, you don't have to care, you just have to, like, relax and let the lunacy wash over you. And he's kind of gotten into it. He mentioned, and I think this is true too, he goes, the reason this show still feels really fresh is they keep cycling people in and out.
Yes.
So you don't have invented crises because they're four seasons in and they have to shake things up for the sake of storytelling.
Yeah, that is actually one of the great strengths of Legends, I think.
Yes.
And it's sad because you do get attached to characters who leave, but also it lets you cut out some dead weight, which, as we saw post-season
remember one. When every CW show had a plot that was just about somebody had a secret that they wouldn't tell somebody that they really cared about because of secrets, and then there were bad feelings?
Yep.
I
feel like we've largely gotten away from that, which is nice.
Thank goodness. That was a dark time.
Yeah.
Dan, can we have the room?
So, Tony, I was trying to protect you. It's fine.
Okay.
I'm just a quirky background character, I'm sure.
I might be understanding, but first I have to go and train with your arch-enemy. So.
Scott McDulty will treat you well, I'm sure.
Crisis on Infinite Podcasts. I'm sorry, it's been a long week and I just found that incredibly funny.
We're here for you, Lisa. This is why I do the podcast, to make you laugh.
No, I'm now imagining, but, like, you know, again, parallel universe podcasts where, like, our evil doppelgangers come in, and I kind of don't want to imagine how that would work. Welcome to hour 6 of the Legends of Tomorrow podcast.
Oh dear.
Oh, what if my doppelganger is the good Tony?
It might be. I was thinking that too. Oh,
mine has a mustache. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, do we want to talk about the preview for next week?
I haven't seen it. All I know is that it's called Legends of to Meow Meow, which is, you know, like, I'm already sold on that. I don't need to tell anything about that. It's just
I saw some fast cuts of stuff that made me just go,
puppets.
What the hell is going on?
I know. I tried to slow it down frame by frame, and all I could do was freeze on the puppets.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we're going to have an all puppet scene. So I'm here for this. I'm very hopeful. And one of the things we did talk about a little bit that we should raise to listeners now is next week's Legends of Two Meow Meow is taking place at the same time all of the very serious and secret having superhero shows are doing, like, a 3-night crossover event. Legends of Tomorrow is not participating, and I believe they said that, no, we're just crossing over with ourselves.
Yeah, which is, I think, for the best for everybody involved.
I don't think that's a thing.
Too. So I think Legends of Two Meow Meow is their attempt to, since they are, of course, Borking Time. I'm here for that, because I have to be honest, sometimes crossover events are tiresome. Like, they're tiring, and you're like, who's that again? Is this working? And it's entertaining, because you're putting all your dolls in the same sandbox. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm relieved that the Legends have their own lunatic sandbox.
Yeah. They're especially weird with the CW stuff, where it's like, we have an ongoing plot for the season that everyone needs to put on pause at the same time.
That's why I appreciate this year. It seems like they're sort of setting aside, like, this is going to be a totally separate thing. We're not going to, like, because they can position it, like, so it's at the mid-season break, you can be like, your ongoing plots, pause. We do a crossover that's not related to anything else. And in this year's, it seems like it's totally, like, alternate reality. So you don't even need to worry about there being any actual implications. And we just have fun for, like, 3 hours, and then we go back to our stuff. And, like, that's fine. That sounds like fun.
And that works, yes. Let's just have fun. That's the whole point. So I think we've actually talked about how much fun this was. And again, I want to remind the audience that next week we'll be podcasting about Legends of Two Meow Meow. And then Legends of Tomorrow goes on mid-season hiatus for however many weeks that is. But since we have a backlog, we will be going back and revisiting the episodes that we didn't get to cover the first time. So again, wildly nonlinear, much like the Legends. But I feel confident we can all roll with it. So, hey, I want to thank everybody for coming out and chatting this up with me and reviving our Legends of Tomorrow flashcast. So thank you, Tony.
Goodbye, nerds.
Bye, nerds. Thank you, Dan.
See you when the timeline fixes itself.
Yep. And beer. I'm Lisa Schmeiser.
Well done.